She had to work to keep the door shut on them, but the sword's treatment of women and children sickened her, and the nightmares had come back in full force. She'd recognized three of the worst offenders, men who were sadistic and cruel and enjoyed the damage they inflicted on young children, boys and girls alike. They had no idea what was about to be unleashed on them. She moved with the wind, a silent, deadly predator, sliding through the darkness like a wraith. Bypassing two of the club members shooting toward the sheriff, she slipped up behind the third one. He and two of his friends always worked together, taking women in the clubhouse and hurting them, laughing when they did. They leered at her, made suggestive remarks, but they were afraid of Victor, and they'd never touched her. They should have been afraid of her.
"Harold,"
she said softly, standing right behind him, close, close so that her breath was warm against his ear.
"You're a sick bastard, and I'm going to kill you."
She didn't do it cleanly. She sliced through arteries as she spoke, the burn of the blade cutting through flesh. Her knife was so sharp he hardly felt the deep cuts to first his gut and then both thighs. Elena stepped back as he spun around, his gun still in his hand. He had a shocked expression on his face as she disarmed him, the weapon flying toward the street.
"You're dead," she explained softly. "Just like all those women you hurt."
She left him bleeding out and faded into the night. Twice more she repeated the ritual, dispatching two of the worst Swords members in the Louisiana chapter. Code was taking Evan's empire apart, starting with the club's finances and moving on to Evan's personal ones. Torpedo Inc. was benefiting from his creative hacking, but it didn't seem to slow the club from trafficking. She wanted it stopped as much as Victor and the others did. She slipped back into the shadows as two more men joined Jonas Harrington in the firefight. One was a sharpshooter. She heard the difference in his rifle. The club members began to try to ease back, with too many of their brethren lying in the street, dead. In the distance, she heard the wail of sirens. Evan had been right in his thinking. Creating this diversion would send all law enforcement converging on Sea Haven, leaving Jackson DeVoe completely alone, except he had Torpedo Inc. to protect him. The other nine members had ridden in with Habit and were there to back up Victor, as they always did. Elena crept through the darkened street toward her next target, Ben Higler, a particularly nasty individual. She had to admire the Torpedo Inc. members. They'd all managed to be so useful to Habit that he'd surrounded himself with them when Evan had commanded Habit to send several of his men with representatives of the other chapters. The Swords hitting Sea Haven had thought to tear up a sleepy town with no way to defend itself. They hadn't come with the big guns Evan had brought with him to the various camps at Egg-Taking Station. There were so many, she was terrified for her brothers in Torpedo Inc. She'd grown up since infancy with all of them. Ice and Storm were her birth brothers, sharing her blood. But all of the others were just as much her siblings. She loved them, and she had wanted to be with them when she saw the enormity of their task. One didn't disobey Victor. His plans always worked if you had faith and didn't deviate. They'd all learned that from hard experience. In the school, if one diverted, or in any way changed details, even when the mission was fluid, loss of life had always been the result. Most times it hadn't been one's own life, but one of the other children. Living with that guilt and sin was nearly impossible. She went into the small space between the two buildings, staying low, moving very cautiously. She knew Ben had wedged himself in there, staying quiet. She'd watched him go in. She half expected that he'd run for it, leaving his club brethren to fight without him. He was that kind of snake. Still, he was the kind of man who was utterly dangerous because he was that low. It would be like cornering a wounded animal. Between the two buildings, it was very dark. She paused to listen for heavy breathing. There was none.
She waited until her eyes adjusted to the lack of light, and then she crept forward, a few inches at a time. She couldn't tell if he was there, but it didn't feel as if he was. She regretted not climbing to the roof, but she would have been exposed to the gunfire. The sounds of the battle, which had been hot and heavy, were now more sporadic, as the sword's crew had been caught in a crossfire between Jonas and Lyssa. Lana had been busy taking several out just as she had. They were picking off the men around the edges, trying to keep them contained so none escaped and returned to the camp. Victor and the others in Torpedo Inc. had enough to contend with. Now, two more men had joined Jonas, and she heard the unmistakable blast of a shotgun as one of the swords tried to get into one of the buildings. The townspeople were helping their sheriff. Any moment now, any stragglers would break and run for it. It was Elena and Lana's job to stop them. She got to the end of the building. It opened up into a yard of some kind. Picnic tables were set out under trees for employees to enjoy breaks and eat lunches. The yard was enclosed with a high wooden fence. The gate on the other side was open a few inches. She stayed very still as she inspected the entire yard. There wasn't anywhere for even a child to hide, let alone a big man like Ben. Satisfied he had to have gone out the gate, she moved along the fence, careful not to make any noise. She had hunted the worst kinds of human beings, and she knew she was now. Men didn't join the swords unless they were particularly vicious, and if they were borderline, they were soon corrupted into thinking it was perfectly okay to rape young men and women, to sell them, to run drugs and guns, the guns going to terrorists. Evan found them in every country. Ben hadn't needed to be corrupted. He'd killed a girl he was dating in high school because she had tried to break up with him. He and a friend went on a spree across the country, finding young women, beating, raping, and leaving them for dead. They'd both found a home in the swords. She eased the gate wider with her foot, staying low. The wind moved grass and leaves, but there was no sound. Still, the adrenaline kicked in. He was close. She reached with every one of her senses. He was there. She smelled sweat, fear. He was only about 5 feet from her, crouched low in the bush just past the open gate. Elena took a breath, gripped the knife she was accustomed to using, and somersaulted straight into the bush, her blade slashing deep across his stomach and ripping through both thighs in a wide X pattern. She was on him and then gone before he could react. He bellowed his hatred as, with one hand, he tried to stop the pumping blood. With the other, he fired his automatic, spraying the entire area with as many bullets as he could before his arms wouldn't cooperate. Elena had rolled away, coming right up against the fence and belly crawling until she was behind him. His body shuddered. He dropped his weapon and then toppled, hitting the ground hard enough that she felt the small tremor. Taking a breath, she stood and moved back out into the open. Ben's partner, Charles, loomed right in front of her. She nearly ran him over, walking toward Ben. She felt the bite of his knife as it sank deep, not once, but three times. She had hers in him as well, slashing sideways, ripping through flesh to the bone, seeking arteries. A shot rang out, and Charles's body jerked. A second one, and he was down, going over backward. Elena went to her knees, her body suddenly weak. She looked down at the stab wounds. It was bad. She'd seen enough wounds to know she was already dead. It was just a matter of time, a very little time. In a way, she was glad it was over, and she'd gone out fighting the kind of men who had robbed her of her childhood. Lana sprinted across the yard to her, wrapping her arm around her and easing her to the ground, calling out for help. Elena wanted to laugh. Who was going to help them? The only two female survivors of a vicious school made up of criminals run by a cruel, sadistic pedophile. Their brothers, the only people they mattered to, were off fighting a war that would probably get a few of them killed. Lana called out again, her hands pressing deep into the wounds. Honey, don't do this. Stay with me. It's all right. No, it isn't. Don't do this. I need you here. We all need you here. She was so tired. She tried to keep looking at Lana. She loved Lana. They'd grown up like twin sisters, the same age, both knowing the world they lived in was violent and scary. They'd relied on each other. No, Elena, Lana whispered, tears in her eyes. Don't go. You can't leave us. You can't leave me. I'm so tired, Elena said. She wanted to sleep, not wake up. She was tired of what she was. She'd never have normal, never have her own family, a man. It wasn't possible. I can't do this without you, Lana insisted. Open your eyes, honey. For me, open your eyes. Elena tried. She struggled to lift her lashes, but her eyelids were too heavy. She tried to move her hand to touch Lana. They'd been sisters since they were infants. She should have told her she loved her. Funny that she never had. She'd never told her brothers either. They didn't do that, any of them. Never have a life, she murmured, wanting Lana to understand. We have Blythe now, Elena. She'll help us. You saw her. Isn't she just what he said? Victor is right. She's magic. We didn't think anyone like her existed, but she's with us, ours. Elena wanted to laugh. Lana had never seen Blythe. Even if the others told her about the woman, she was just using any means possible to keep her there. Still, Lana was right about Blythe. There was a kind of magic about her. They believed she could change their lives, or maybe they wanted it so badly they were willing to believe. And they all believed in Victor. If he believed in Blythe, then she was for real. There was a stirring behind them. Lana whirled around, her weapon up. Lyssa was there with another woman. The woman smiled at them. I'm Libby Drake Derrick. I'm a doctor, a healer. Let me help. Was Lana crying? They'd all learned not to cry. Elena wanted to tell her she had to keep silent or the sound would draw attention to her. That could be fatal. Then there was the warmth, a blue light behind her eyes. It burned in the wounds. She closed her eyes and let herself slide into darkness. She'd lived there for so long, it was an old friend. She could hear Lana weeping openly now, but she couldn't open her eyes. She's going to live, Libby said softly, but it's going to take a while to heal completely. I've got to get to Jonas. He was hit as well. It's not serious, but bad enough he needs attention. An ambulance is coming. She'll need a hospital stay and then a place to recover. Blythe has a big house, Lana volunteered instantly. We can take care of her there, no problem. Even sliding into darkness with burning wounds, Elena found humor in that. Blythe would be taking on another wild child. Chapter 21 In spite of being surrounded by women of power, elements that could call on water and earth, Blythe was terrified. She'd hiked into Jackson Demonstration Forest, using one of the old logging roads that would bring them out above the various campgrounds by the river. Victor had said the swords had slipped in a few at a time, taking over the campgrounds along the Noyo River, and radiating out from there. They were 100 strong. No way had any of them expected Evan to bring that kind of firepower with him. Ordinarily, a club respected territories of other clubs, and the swords claimed the East Coast, mainly. They had chapters in various states and countries, but they stayed off the West Coast, as far as she knew. She hadn't heard about any clashes or wars going on between clubs recently. Of course, the swords hadn't been wearing their colors when they arrived in the campgrounds a few days earlier. Jackson and Jonas had made certain the gates leading to the upper campgrounds were locked, and the swords members confined themselves to the lower ones. leaving the higher vantage points to Victor's birth brothers and the women. He'd assured Blythe that the rest of Torpedo Inc. had arrived, coming in with Habit and the chapter from Louisiana, the one Jackson's father had ridden with. She peered down at the men moving through the woods, preparing to ambush the deputy. There were so many they reminded her of ants marching through the jungle, taking everything in their path. Her heart pounded so hard she feared she might have a heart attack. They looked invincible. Elle took her hand. "I've never seen you like this." Blythe glanced down at her. Jackson was her husband and the target, yet she was calm and seemed to have faith. She didn't even know Victor, but she was putting her trust in him, his birth brothers, and the members of Torpedo Inc.
"I lost him once," Blythe said, "and it terrifies me that it could happen again. He isn't always careful. He just goes in like a kamikaze and wreaks havoc."
Even as she stated her fear, she knew it wasn't true. Victor always had a plan. He was meticulous about every detail, so much so that he had a backup plan for every contingency. She shook her head.
"I shouldn't have said that. He's fearless, and that's not always a good thing. But he plans, and he's a good strategist. I hope when this is all over, you and Victor will come visit us and allow us to visit with you,"
Elle ventured in a cautious tone.
"I know Mom would love to see you as well."
Blythe shook her head automatically. She hadn't talked to her aunt since the trial, not even at her mother's funeral. She hadn't gone. They'd buried her, and she let them. She hadn't wanted anything to do with her mother, even after she died. She'd taken her child, her beautiful daughter, from her, and Blythe just couldn't find it in her heart to forgive her.
"I don't know, Elle," she tried to be honest. "Victor knows me so well, and if I'm the least bit uncomfortable..."
She broke off and then tried again.
"He isn't a man to care what others think. He might say something the aunts wouldn't like." "That's their consequences," Elle said. "Your family. He's family. He has the right to express his opinion and to protect you if he feels you need it. Jackson certainly does. He's not quiet if he doesn't like something. Neither is Ilya or Alec or Jonas. Just think about it. I'd like to stay part of your life."
Blythe found herself smiling. She wanted to be part of Elle's life as well. She'd loved her cousins, envied the way the siblings stuck together, and had always wanted to be one of them.
"I hope all of you give Victor a chance. He's rough, but he's a good man." "Who was the boy on your front porch?"
Lexi asked, catching up with them as they hiked along a narrow game trail.
"He was terribly thin." "That's Kenny. He'll be living with us," Blythe said.
They'd had an interesting talk in the morning after Kenny had arrived, especially after she'd insisted a doctor examine him. Kenny had insisted he was going to stay with Victor and Torpedo Inc., and Victor had insisted he was going to live there on the farm and do what kids do. In the end, she'd had to make peace between them. Kenny didn't want to back down, and Victor resorted to physical threats. She realized that was the way his brothers handled things between them. She'd had to make it very clear that wasn't going to be the way problems with the children were going to be handled.
"I thought you said you were taking in girls,"
Lexi said, puzzled. Elle shot her a quick glance.
"Girls? Plural?"
Blythe was resigned to the reaction.
"Yes," she admitted. "We're taking in three girls. They're sisters, and two of them were victims of human trafficking." "Like Ariana's children,"
Elle said softly.
"Ilya thinks she's amazing. How are they doing?" "They still prefer to sleep in Ariana and Max's bedroom, but they're getting better,"
Lexi reported.
"Ariana was worried they wouldn't be happy when they learned she was expecting, but they're all very excited. She told them Blythe was going to have three girls for them to play and study with."
"Three girls, Blythe?" Elle repeated. Blythe shrugged.
"They need a home, and I can give them one. The farm has a way of helping to heal. It's been good for all of us, and I think it will be for them as well.
And the boy? El prompted. They were nearly to their destination and began to move much more cautiously. Lexi made certain brush and leaves didn't give them away as the group made their way to the knoll overlooking the Noyo River.
He was a victim as well,
Blythe said, hesitating. She knew that sympathy always ran high with female victims, but not so much with males. Sometimes even parents, especially fathers, could blame the child. She was already very protective of Kenny. Lexi shook her head and moved ahead of them, but not before Blythe caught the sheen of tears in her eyes. She wanted to put her arms around her youngest sister. Lexi had a huge heart, and she'd gone through so much, it was easy for her to understand and sympathize with the children living on the farm.
You don't seem in the least bit nervous, Blythe pointed out to Elle, needing to change the subject.
She didn't know what she'd do if Victor didn't survive, or how she could possibly cope alone with four traumatized children, two of whom were teens.
Sarah's with Jackson, Ella said. She has precog, and she'll know when one of the men is in trouble. Ilya's in the truck with the camper shell, along with Lev and Alec, Abigail's husband. He attended the same school with Ilya and worked for Interpol, too. I think Maxime and Stefan are also with them. The vehicle has armor plating and bulletproof glass. I've rested for the last month, and although I have to be careful still, I can feel power returning.
Blythe felt the familiar tightening in her belly that signaled trouble was coming. Looking down at the activity below them, she was certain of it.
Victor, I'm here, safe. You stay above that gate and keep to the heavier brush. Evan is a dangerous psychopath. Seriously, Blythe.
Now that she knew she could touch his mind with hers, she could breathe easier. Beside her, Elle suddenly tensed.
Jackson just drove past the checkpoint. There are seven swords hidden on the main road watching for him. They just radioed Evan. They will have him surrounded when they make their move. Those seven are blocking the way back out. More will join them when he gets in the pocket.
He's here,
Elle whispered.
Blythe, are you absolutely certain you can keep Evan from using whatever talent he has?
Yes,
Blythe said it firmly.
Tell Jackson there are seven club members coming in behind him, and the plan is to surround him and then block him in so he has nowhere to go.
Already she could feel the air charging with energy, and that allowed her to pinpoint Evan. He was in the middle of a swarm of men, at least 30 with him in the center. She found it interesting how men like Evan gave orders to kidnap, torture, and kill, but they surrounded themselves with bodyguards in order to stay alive. He certainly wasn't taking any chances. Evan was down in one of the hollows by the river, a bad position for him, but he had no way of knowing that. He thought he was safe with his psychic gifts, his club members and bodyguards.
They have heavy artillery. He sells guns, so he has access to all kinds of them. All kinds. He's given the order that Jackson can be wounded but not killed. He actually said he'd kill anyone who disobeys him. That gives Jackson some breathing room. No one is going to want to go up against Evan, so they'll hang back and try to keep him pinned down.
Victor's voice in her mind steadied her, and she noticed that Elle had settled as well, with Jackson reassuring her telepathically. Still, there was no ignoring that tightness in her belly that signaled trouble. Victor was down there in the worst of it.
Be safe,
she whispered to him, pouring everything she felt for him into his mind. He had to know that she needed him that much, that she wanted him that much, that he was forever her choice.
I love you more than life, Blythe. You don't come down from there for any reason. You have to be safe. You understand me? I've been doing this all my life, and I'm damned good at it. But you...
Blythe glanced behind her. Lexi had settled into the small depression they'd made days earlier, before any of the swords had arrived. They'd had a couple of days to plan out their strategies. Victor and his birth brothers had gone over the area where the women would be concealed many times, placing each of their positions carefully. Lexi put her hands in the soil, and Blythe felt, even through the soles of her shoes, the way the earth responded, and the shimmer of power that rushed around them. Leaves on the trees rustled of their own accord without the presence of the wind. Ricky and Abigail were closer to the river. They'd found a small 2-inch steady stream of water leading down to the river. The entire area was wet, moss growing everywhere, and that moisture was all Ricky needed. Abigail had positioned herself where she could direct insects and small animals. Blythe was mostly worried about El Drake. She was a powerhouse when it came to psychic energy, but she'd almost destroyed her abilities just a short month or so earlier. Using psychic energy was risky for her, and Blythe had overheard Jackson cautioning her, strongly, that she couldn't overdo it. He wanted her only to use her abilities when they were desperately needed. He'd constructed a blind for her, much like a sniper might use, one that concealed her completely.
"We're in position," she reported to Victor.
Evan had positioned his club members in a loose circle around the road. It hadn't been difficult. All the campgrounds were off the main road, either down on the river or up above it. He had the various members simply remain in their camps as if they were staying there. It was a simple plan: draw the sheriff into the middle of the net and then close it around him. The thing was, it could work. The road made it impossible to travel at high speeds. The terrain was rough. There were narrow wooden bridges a motorcycle could get across, but a vehicle couldn't. The odds were stacked against Jackson, for certain. There were so many swords, far more than Victor had ever conceived the man would bring with him. Evan was putting his motorcycle club at risk with this venture, but apparently his hatred of Jackson and need for revenge far outweighed his love of the club.
"I'm passing the point of no return," Jackson said, using the bridge El created between the other members of their group and Torpedo Inc. "Keep coming. They'll have a truck fall in behind you," Victor said. "My boys will take care of that. Steel, Savage, you on that?"
Savage and Steel, both wearing sword colors, stepped out on either side of the road as the truck carrying the 6 men Evan had sent to watch for Jackson's arrival came up the road. It slowed and came to a stop when they approached.
"Need a ride. Habit sent us to back you up," Steele said as he approached. "We'll climb in the back."
The driver nodded. Steele had already picked his 3 targets. He didn't bother to confirm with Savage. Knowing him, the man was going to take them all. Steele put his hand on the door, smiling amicably, and shot the driver in the head, and then turned the gun on the 2 closest swords in the back of the pickup. Savage had dropped all 3 of his targets before Steele finished squeezing the trigger.
"We'll be coming up behind him, Czar," Steele reported. "The truck is ours. Just ignore it as if you think they're campers. You feeling a little like the turkey at a turkey shoot yet?" "Not my favorite person right now, Victor," Jackson said. "Don't expect anything under the tree at Christmas from me." "I should be," Victor said. "My boys are gonna save your ass."
"Victor," Blythe broke in, "I'm not close enough. I can feel tendrils of energy coming from the source, and I can't tap into it and take it until I get the entire stream."
Victor's heart jerked hard.
"Stay where you are."
"I have to move a little closer. I won't be able to stop Evan when he resorts to using a psychic power."
He could tell she was already on the move. He shot a glance in her direction. Evidently, the others were masking her presence, because there was no telltale sign of dirt rising, or even the movement of the trees or bush. He breathed a sigh of relief. Jackson's truck was nearly to the ambush site. A beat-up, ancient-looking camper was sitting just ahead in the road with a man dressed in old blue jeans and a plaid T-shirt standing beside it, waving a cell phone.
"That's Ronnie, one of Evan's hand-picked soldiers, armed to the teeth,
and the camper shell houses four others, Victor informed him. Come up on his left, away from the river. Angle your truck so you're closer to that ditch.
Jackson drove to within several feet of the camper, but did as Victor instructed.
I want you to know you don't keep my ass alive. My woman is going to roast you. Not my job. My job is to kill that son of a bitch. My boys have the job of making sure your ass is still alive at the end of all of this. You hearing this, Al? Victor questioned.
Jackson.
His name was breathed into their minds, soft, a caress, so intimate it was difficult to hear.
I'm alive, baby,
Jackson assured her.
You know I've been in worse spots. Ink, we need that map now. We need to know where each of us is all the time. Keys, the moment he gives it to you, light us up. Good guys blue, bad guys red. Got that, everyone? Bad guys red. Don't shoot one another,
Victor cautioned.
Almost done, Ink said.
Using the vision from the birds and animals surrounding them, he was able to map out the location of every sword member and pass the information on to another Torpedo Inc. member, Keys. Keys immediately projected the laser-like red dots on their targets and then the blue on everyone left.
Check to make certain you're wearing the correct color dot. And if I missed someone, shout out.
Pretty certain you missed me,
Jackson said.
You have the biggest targets all over you,
Victor said.
You just can't see them yet.
He felt El's reaction and wished he hadn't joked with the man. His woman was having a difficult time with her husband being a sitting duck. Jackson deliberately sat in his truck as if he was listening to his dispatcher. He spoke into the radio and then opened his door. Casual, confident. Victor liked the man for that. Most would be sweating.
Lexi, get the ground prepared for him. All hell could break loose at any time.
She's on it,
Blythe said. He heard the strain in her voice and wished, for the millionth time, he had forbidden her to participate. He found himself torn in two directions. After 5 years of living with slime, he wanted to kill Evan Shackler Grotzos and rid the world of someone so vile. On the other hand, he wanted to throw his woman over his shoulder and get her to safety. The moment Jackson set his foot on the ground, Victor felt small vibrations traveling up his leg. Lexi, he knew, was communicating with the Earth, sending it orders. He hoped she was as good as Gavriel and the others had said. She'd need to be. Jackson slid out of his truck, his thumb sliding the safety off his weapon as he approached the camper.
Don't go past that bumper for any reason, Victor cautioned.
Jackson stopped abruptly, just short of rounding the hood.
You call? I've got another call I have to go to. Tell me what's going on, but make it fast.
As he spoke, the swords stepped out of the tree line on three sides of him, all wearing their colors. A good 100 strong, making an arc, coming out of every campground or rising up out of the brush. Jackson pulled his weapon from his holster and laid it against his thigh as he looked around.
You invited me to the party? How nice. Haven't been to one of these in years.
Ronnie shook his head.
Not my party, but you were invited.
He stepped back, and a group of men walked forward together as a tight-knit unit, just as a truck closed in behind the sheriff's truck, effectively blocking him in. Jackson kept his eyes glued to the man in the center he caught glimpses of.
That's Evan. He's surrounded by bodyguards, and they're keeping close to him. They're all wearing body armor,
Jackson reported to Victor. Victor slipped back out of the crowd of swords where he'd been stationed with Habit and the Louisiana chapter. As he'd expected, Evan wanted them close. They were to the right of Jackson. He didn't have a good angle for a kill shot.
I have to get into position. Reaper, mechanic, absinthe, transporter, Casimir, and preacher. Get into position to take out the guards.
Moving now. Within moments, each man had checked in to say they were in position. Victor still couldn't get a clear shot, but the angle was better, and he was certain once he had the guards cleared away, he could kill Evan. The moment the guards fell, or the sound of gunshots rang out, all hell would break loose. Jackson's safety was paramount, and he was in a dangerous position.
"Are you going to hide in your little protective circle like a coward, or come out and face me?" Jackson said. "Clearly you arranged the reception."
He gestured with one hand, keeping the other holding his gun down by his thigh.
"I'm feeling very honored that you thought so much of me you had to bring an army with you."
The air shimmered, grew hot. Around the bodyguards, a visual shield of translucent, iridescent waves appeared. Evan Shackler Grazzo stepped to the front. He wasn't tall, and his once stocky frame was thin. His nose was slightly hooked, and his cheeks hollow. His skin looked sallow, but his eyes were alive with hatred and glee.
"I see you sample your own products," Jackson continued matter-of-factly. "Not a good idea, but then you never were very smart. Evan Shackler, the whiny kid who followed my father around everywhere. I remember you. You looked better when you were 15.
"Do you feel his power? My God, he's nearly filling the entire campground, and he's not even generating much actual energy."
Elle's voice shook.
"You've got this, baby," Jackson assured.
The moment he responded, little sparks of red and orange zipped through the air around Jackson, landing on his skin like tiny fireflies, burning him. Evan looked around.
"Is that little bitch of yours here? Good. My men are going to party hard with her tonight. She was hard to train, not one of the bright ones, but in the end she did what she was born for."
"I'm moving closer,"
Blythe was firm.
"Jackson, don't answer us no matter what. He's concentrating on you."
"Damn it, Blythe, you stay put."
Victor didn't want her anywhere near Evan. That bad feeling nagging at him kept growing. That wall of transparency shimmering between Evan, his bodyguards, and everyone else meant no bullets would penetrate.
"Just get down his protection so I can take the shot."
"I have to be closer to do it. He's very powerful. It's going to take a minute, so be ready. Lexi, you need to be ready just in case. Ricky, you and Abby, too. This entire forest could go up in flames if he gets a chance to retaliate."
That didn't make Victor feel better about her moving from the pocket of safety they'd created for the women. He risked a glance up toward the road where the women were concealed. The gate was closed and locked, but that didn't mean bullets couldn't reach them or any of the swords rushing up the road to get them.
"Player, you're nearest to Blythe. Make your way closer. Do it slow so no one notices you changing position." "I killed your father," Evan said, "and then I killed my mother. I shot him 6 times and drowned her. Everyone thought a rival club killed him, and my brother drowned my mother. It's easy to manipulate people into believing anything I want them to. I kept my eye on you, but I couldn't get to you. But then my brother took your woman. I tried to get her from him, but he wouldn't let me have her."
Evan grinned.
"He was such an idiot, I had to show him how to train her. He enjoyed it, but learned he did too late."
Jackson just watched him. He didn't move a muscle.
"Put the gun down. You're surrounded, in case you hadn't noticed."
"I'll keep it, thanks."
Jackson deliberately took a slow look around the circle of grim faces.
"You really must think I'm a badass to bring so many of your little friends."
Evan shrugged.
"They need to witness what I do to my enemies. It keeps them in line. Put the gun down."
Jackson slowly shook his head. Evan raised his hand. The tension in the air became so heavy, it felt like a gathering tornado. He pushed the air toward Jackson. Fire crackled. Flames snapped toward him like a great whip. The crack was loud. The whip of flames never touched Jackson. The moment Evan created it, and the long, sizzling whip of fire rushed toward Jackson, a powerful vacuum sucked it away from him. The shimmer around Evan tumbled down.
Under the truck. Now, Jackson,
Victor commanded as he took the shot. Evan dove to the ground as his bodyguards began to shoot at Jackson and the camper with automatic weapons. They'd lined the inside of the camper with protective, bulletproof armor, but it was taking a tremendous hit. Jackson was already rolling under the truck into the depression Lexi had created for him. He hunkered down as deep as the long depression allowed, while hundreds of bullets hit his vehicle. The moment the first shot was fired, the world turned to hell, with the swords shooting at everything and nothing. The noise was loud, and chaos reigned. A wall of flames rushed toward the truck and leapt to surrounding trees. Men rushed between Victor and his target, but he was relentless, stalking the man, trusting his brothers to take out the bodyguards. It was impossible to see for a moment as Lexi and Elle created some kind of dirt barrier between the truck and the wall of rushing flames.
"Go, go," Blythe said. "Get out of there. He's very powerful."
Jackson rolled to his left, down into the deeper ditch. Elia, Sarah, and Alec burst out of the truck with Maxime and Stefan as a wall of flame rushed over it. They leapt for the ditch. The flames followed and hit a solid wall of dirt and water.
"Lexi, Ricky, Abby, I've got this now," Elia said. "I can defend us here. You and Elle let Blythe feed you power and take out the rest of them."
Steele and Savage joined Jackson and the others in the ditch. They went back to back, as did Sarah and Elia and Jackson and Alec. Reaper fired, and one of the bodyguards went down, giving Victor another glimpse of Evan, just his leg, but it was a target. He took the shot, and the man screamed. One of the bodyguards reached down and dragged him up and into the center of them. Evan disappeared, but the battle began for supremacy. The egg-taking station campground became an instant battleground. The Swords members stepped toward the truck from all directions, pouring bullets from every type of weapon, from handguns and shotguns to automatic rifles. Torpedo Inc. and the Prokensky brothers shot their targets methodically, kill shots as they'd been trained from the time they were children. As the Swords went down, they became aware that Jackson and his small band of defenders weren't the only enemy. The club members rushed for cover or hit the ground. A few ran toward the bikes. The fight in those few seconds was hot, not just from the wild gun battle, but from the flames Evan threw in every direction in order to cover his retreat. Victor had to fight through the bodies and skirmishers, the smoke and flames, to try to keep track of the bodyguards and Evan abandoning the field. Victor felt the exact moment when Blythe took control. It was impossible not to feel it. Everyone felt it. For one moment, guns fell silent. Power became a living, breathing entity. So strong the force of it shook the earth beneath their feet, the trees and bushes swaying. The flames froze so they appeared as long towers of flickering orange and red. Evan's scream pierced the stillness. It was the wounded cry of an animal, and then he was yelling for his men to get the bitch on the hillside.
Get her now! Kill her! 1 million to the man who brings me her fucking head!
Victor's heart nearly stopped. He turned his head to see his worst nightmare. Blythe was in plain sight, her face a mask of concentration.
Get down! Get down!
Victor yelled the command into her mind, willing her to obey him. Blythe wasn't the kind of woman who jumped at a man's directive, but he poured every ounce of who and what he'd been made into inside that order. His heart thudded wildly, and he could taste fear in his mouth. As Evan screamed, she dropped to the ground and dirt and leaves geysered up in front of her like a massive fountain, a wall between her and the barrage of bullets coming her way. He vowed to remember to find a way to thank Lexi later. Ricky was taking the energy Blythe wove and bound to the woman's powerful gifts, and she doused the flames licking through the grass and trees. At the same time, the river rose, sweeping several of the Swords away with the sudden force of power in the water. Gavriel, Lev, and Master, one of the Torpedo Inc. members, ran toward the locked gate, firing at the 10 club members who had peeled off to obey Evan. Gavriel was fearless, firing on the run as he leapt over the gate and then ran backward, using 2 weapons, blocking the road between the club members and the women. Master went to his knee just in front of the gate and Lev to the side of it. The ground trembled and then shook, knocking the 4 remaining club members down on top of their brethren Lev, Gavriel, and Master had killed. The moment the 4 men went down, Lev and Master were standing above them, firing the kill shots before any of the men could recover. Mechanic followed the group of bodyguards surrounding Victor. He moved carefully through the swords, his weapon out, trying to look as if he were part of the battle. He sighted on the calf of one of the bodyguards, squeezed the trigger, and brought him down. While the man lay writhing on the ground, the group kept running, dragging Evan between them. They were angling up toward the back logging roads, headed back toward the railroad tracks. Mechanic shot the bodyguard in the head as he lifted his automatic toward the bluff where Blythe was. To Victor, it looked as if every sword member was looking to collect the $1 million Evan had promised for Blythe's head. They turned away from Jackson and began to try to work their way up through the campgrounds and trees toward the road where the women were stationed.
Get out of there, all of you.
We can't. We move and Evan will take over again. I've got his power. He can't use it. You have to kill him, Victor, Blythe said. We'll hold them back until you get the job done.
There isn't holding back 100 men, Blythe.
The woman made him crazy.
Can't you do one damned thing I tell you to do?
Not if it means you and the others could die.
She was firm on that. There wasn't going to be any budging her, so Victor didn't argue. The sword members looked like locusts swarming, but Torpedo Inc. and his blood brothers were whittling them down. He saw Player and Maestro take out 6 with just 6 quick shots, and then they ran to protect Blythe, still firing, picking off 2 more on the edge of the road. Code fired methodically, bringing down a good number by himself. Absinthe went to one knee between 2 sword members, but he wasn't looking toward Blythe, but to the left of her. He fired and one of the bodyguards jerked and then fell, tumbling down through the grass. He immediately turned right and then left, firing at nearly point-blank range on the 2 sword members on either side of him. Evan turned toward the battle and raised his arms, gathering power. Victor took a shot at him, but was at an odd angle and just winged him in the shoulder. Cursing, Evan dropped to the ground, the 2 bodyguards putting their bodies in front of him. As they did, Preacher and Casimir fired simultaneously and both toppled. Evan wasn't there. Victor raced toward the spot where Evan had been. When he reached the 2 bodies on the ground, he realized just how close to the women Evan had gotten. He was parallel to Blythe and over to the left by about 30 feet. Club members were still firing weapons, trying to get to her, trying to be the one to collect the reward.
Where'd he go, Blythe? I can't see him.
He's hidden in the grove of trees just above where you are. Be careful, Victor. He's up to something.
Victor was still wearing sword colors, relying on the identifying mark Keyes had put on him. He began to make his way up toward Evan, hoping the sword president wanted more company than just the 1 bodyguard remaining. He actually felt the small tremor in the earth and thought it was Lexi, but then dirt trickled and burst like a fountain right under Blythe. His heart stopped. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Evan rise with his bodyguard shielding him. Blythe tumbled with the dirt toward the men below. Transporter fired, and the bodyguard went down. Victor was already running toward Blythe. No one was more important. It didn't matter if Evan got away, even after 5 years and all the sacrifices. Blythe was everything, and he wasn't about to lose her. He sprinted toward his woman as she rolled almost to the feet of 3 of the swords. The men lifted their guns to empty them into her, and Victor shot while he ran. 3 rapid squeezes of the trigger, with blurring speed, sending the men falling on top of her. She didn't make a sound, not even when 4 other club members began shooting at her, and the bullets thunked into the bodies of the dead men protecting her. Maxime and Stefan had worked their way through the swords to get to Blythe and killed two of the shooters and Victor the others. The three were there, forming a solid wall of protection, while Lexi, Abigail, and Ricky threw up a barrier. Evan turned and ran up the logging road, his heart pounding, his belief in his superiority still safe. He was legend, a man impossible to defeat. It didn't matter that others had psychic gifts or an army against him. He would win. He always won. A small figure slid out of the trees just in front of him. The wind whipped through the trees, blowing her red hair around her like a cloak. He skidded to a halt. Fate always favored him. Always. He had fought his way up, and this was his reward, a fortune that kept him safe. A club he'd taken by force, killing the members in his way. The largest human trafficking ring in the world and growing every day. And now, his greatest enemy's woman, El Drake. She was still damaged, burned out. He'd paid a fortune for that information, and then he'd killed the source, a man from Sea Haven who had spent time in the grocery store listening for any gossip or small tidbit of information he could pass on to Evan. Evan had pieced it all together. He waited for her opening move. He would counter it and bring her to her knees in front of him before he destroyed her. He wanted Jackson to find her that way. He wished he had time to drag her out of there. Jackson would suffer more, thinking she was in his hands. He could have sold her to the Arabs. The possibilities were endless. She glanced toward the general direction of the Drake house, and the wind touched her face. Her eyes never left him. He didn't have time to dick around. He had to kill her and get out of there before someone came looking. He lifted his hands and realized that stupid bitch diverting his power might have fallen, but she hadn't released her hold on the energy flowing. In fact, it had increased. She'd gathered the energy from the battle and from him and bound it together with the women and men there. She'd taken it from the wind and the women standing on the widow's walk at the Drake house. The power crackled in the air surrounding El Drake. She lifted her arms and countered his weak push. Fire raced around him. Water bubbled up from the earth beneath his feet, turning the ground to mush. He began to sink. The first tree toppled, landing close, the branches whipping around him, knocking him to the muddy ground. The earth seemed to rise, dirt and mud covering him as vines and the branches of the tree reached for him. She was going to bury him like a worm in the ground. He couldn't have that. Evan screamed. This couldn't happen. A woman, a damaged woman at that. She was nothing, a body to use. This couldn't be happening. He fought to get away from the vines and the rising water, turning the ground to quicksand. The vines slithered along the top of the ground and then over his body, wrapping him up, holding him still. Roots burst from the ground like terrible spears, penetrating his flesh everywhere. He kept his eyes on El Drake. She hadn't moved other than her arms. She looked calm, serene. There was no brain bleed to end her life. The power the others offered up, and the way that woman bound the energy together, El didn't have to use much of her own. She simply took what was offered. He died hard, the pain excruciating, all the while looking at the woman who didn't so much as flinch. Behind her, two men wearing torpedo ink colors skidded to a halt. One held a hand to his bloody shirt, low on his left side. Ice and storm watched as the body sank beneath the mud and dirt and eventually disappeared.
"Nice work," Ice told El. "Your man's causing a ruckus. Wouldn't want to be in your shoes when he finds you."
She smiled tiredly and touched his wound. At once, warmth flowed into him.
"How many wounded?"
"Quite a few, but none dead on our side. That's a plus," Storm said.
"Are my sisters here yet? I'll need them to help with the wounded."
"Not yet, but I imagine word was sent for them. They're still mopping up, making certain we have all the sword members. A few got away, and hopefully they're long gone."
Won't they come after you and the others?
Ice shrugged.
Maybe. Let them come. We don't mind enemies. We wouldn't know what to do without them.
Chapter 22
Blythe, did you hide the salt again?
Kenny demanded. Darby gave him a look of pure disdain from under the crescent of feathery dark lashes.
Salt isn't good for you.
Blythe glanced at Victor, who grinned at her.
Darby's right, Kenny. I salt the food when I'm cooking it. There's plenty on there.
Kenny muttered something under his breath Blythe ignored. She was fairly certain he wanted the salt because Victor did. Anything Victor did, Kenny did. Emily giggled, and even Zoe, the 11-year-old, gave a faint smile. Darby caught it and glanced at Blythe to make certain she'd seen it. Zoe rarely spoke and never smiled. She was very traumatized by what had happened to her. A doctor had declared that all of the children were free of disease and neither girl was pregnant, but Zoe's and Darby's bruises were just now fading. Emily was still uncertain about her new home. She was terrified she'd be separated from her sisters again. Blythe knew it was going to be a long road ahead for all of them to integrate into one family. But at least all the children wanted to be there, and that was a start. Elena nudged Kenny and handed him something under the table. She was pale and couldn't be up for more than a few minutes without getting tired, but she was recovering. Kenny scowled when Blythe held out her hand, but put the salt shaker in her open palm.
It's pink, anyway, he declared. Who wants to use pink salt?
The door opened and Reaper and Savage walked in.
Hey, Blythe, sorry we're late. Had to escort that kid back home. He's taken to trying to sneak up on us.
Blythe laughed.
Benito is a handful. He's trying to follow in Maxime's footsteps.
He's pretty good,
Savage commented, and dragged a chair out from the table with the toe of his motorcycle boot. He winked at Emily.
You up for a ride today?
Blythe loved that all the members of the club were good with the children. They seemed to have an affinity for them. Emily shook her head, but Blythe noticed she smiled again. The smiles were coming a little more often.
I'm ready for a ride, Kenny declared. I want to learn to ride a motorcycle.
You do your schoolwork?
Victor asked. Kenny kept his head down, forking eggs into his mouth.
Yeah, that's what I thought. No schoolwork, no motorcycle, Victor said. We made a deal. In this family, we have a code of honor, Kenny. You get me?
Kenny looked up at his hero, gave a brief nod, and went back to eating. Reaper wedged himself between Blythe and Darby and helped himself to eggs and bacon out of the warmer. The door opened and Ice and Storm came in. Both nodded at everyone at the table, drew up chairs and reached for plates off the stack Blythe had resigned herself to keeping on the sideboard, along with extra silverware and napkins. Club members never knocked. They just walked in. They treated the children and her as family. They had a strict code they lived by, but they didn't have many rules. Blythe hadn't had the best family life, so she was willing to change some of her beliefs when it came to rules within a family. That meant the members walking into her home and treating it like their own was part of that. Her refrigerator was always full with groceries, because if they came, they always brought food and drink with them, and they came every day. She sat back as transporter and mechanic came in, followed by two of the newer-to-her club members, Steel and Code. The first week after the battle, the club had brought in a second long table. Blythe had realized why immediately.
Savage has contraband,
Darby declared.
You little snitch,
Savage said, scowling at her.
See if I give you a ride to school.
We don't have school today,
Darby said, her nose in the air, but laughter in her eyes.
In any case, I can walk. It's just at Ariana and Maxime's house.
Give it, Savage,
Blythe demanded, holding her hand out.
Come on, Victor, control your woman, Savage said.
Blythe snapped her fingers.
Hand it over right now.
Savage glared at Victor, who shrugged.
Don't want to get cut off because you can't eat your eggs without pouring salt on them.
Oh, my God, that is so inappropriate, Blythe said, switching her attention to her husband. You can't say things like that in front of the children.
Why not?
Every member of Torpedo Inc. sitting at the table asked simultaneously.
What can't you say?
Absinthe, Master, and Ink asked, walking in. Behind them came Preacher, Maestro, and Keys, followed by Lana.
Czar wants to get laid,
Transporter supplied.
Did Blythe cut you off?
Absinthe asked.
Reaper says the two of you go at it like rabbits. Victor, stop them right now,
Blythe demanded, and snatched the salt shaker away from Savage, who had liberally doused his eggs and was passing it to Kenny.
Babe.
It was Victor's word for everything. The rest of Torpedo Inc. pulled out the chairs around the second table, and Lana grabbed the food warmers to put them out while Maestro and Keys plopped the plates and silverware on the table.
Got coffee, Blythe?
Master asked.
In the other room, a full pot, she said.
She'd learned that coffee was essential. It seemed to be in its own food group. She had also learned that the club was big and noisy, but treated one another as family with a great deal of respect, and her most of all. She opened her mouth to try to tell them about the children, but then closed it because a small sound escaped from Darby's throat. Her eyes were filled with tears. Instantly, she had the attention of everyone at both tables. She jerked her chin in the direction of her little sister, who was watching Ice and Storm, and her bottom lip had definitely curled into a very small smile. Zoe was smiling. It wasn't big, it wasn't a laugh, it barely reached her eyes or lit her face, but she was smiling. It was a first, and Blythe felt like crying right along with Darby. Instead, she followed Zoe's gaze to the two brothers who, like everyone else, had stopped moving. Ice's hands were wrapped around a salt shaker, and he was just handing it to his brother. Blythe cleared her throat.
More contraband? Seriously? Hand it over right this minute.
She beckoned with her fingers.
What is it with all of you and salt? Catsup, too,
Elena said with some disgust.
I told them I would never cook again for them if they poured that stuff on my fine cuisine. They are food morons.
You're a food snob,
Storm said, grabbing the salt shaker and dousing his eggs.
But the best cook ever, so you're allowed.
He hastily tacked his assessment of Elena's skills on at the end of his sentence, because if he didn't, he feared she wouldn't cook them another meal.
Where are we with the money for the land and houses we're purchasing, Code?
Victor asked.
We're set. I sent every dirty detail about each of the chapters in every country or city to the cops not listed in the books I discovered. Every chapter kept their own books, and they were required to keep perfect records for Evan.
Good for us, bad for them,
Code answered.
The Sword Club is officially bankrupt, as is the Shackler Grossos estate. All the freighters and ships were confiscated. Most of their money disappeared, as if Evan never had it. Again, too bad for his estate and good for us. In other words, we've got enough to never worry for several lifetimes.
Blythe closed her eyes. She wasn't certain talking about club business at the breakfast table, particularly stealing money, even if it was a criminal's money, in front of the kids, was a good idea. She'd argued with Victor, but he pointed out that they didn't have a clubhouse yet, so their home was the only place. In any case, he insisted, the children would grow up with the club and had to know they didn't ever talk about anything they heard to anyone. She just hoped that what Code said was over Zoe's and Emily's heads.
A couple of your brothers want in, Steele said, Gavriel and Casimir. I told them we'd talk it over and put it to a vote.
I want in,
Kenny said.
School.
The word reverberated through the dining room as all 18 members said it simultaneously. Kenny groaned, rolled his eyes, and looked at Darby. She smiled at him in sympathy. Victor nodded.
We'll take care of that later. There might be concerns.
Blythe was fairly certain he meant Gavril and Casimir, knowing they were still doing things that could be construed as illegal. Gavril, for certain, wouldn't care. She didn't know Casimir well enough to know if he would.
What about the permits? You get what we need, Absinthe?
Blythe's breath caught in her throat.
Did you? Babe.
Of course Absinthe had used his psychic gift to get the permits they needed for building. He made the deals for the club, and he could persuade anyone, with the exception of those at the table, to do just about anything he wanted. Blythe sighed. She loved that they were working for a common goal. They wanted homes and businesses. They wanted a clubhouse. They wanted to put down roots. She'd wanted a family of her own. Looking around the table, she knew she had it. She felt her husband's eyes on her, and she looked up at his face. She could see love there. It was in every line, in his eyes, in the curve of his mouth.
Blythe and I are headed out on the bike today. She needs a little downtime, and I want the day with her. Ice, Storm, you're on duty here with the kids. The rest of you get our bedroom finished.
He'd promised to soundproof it, and he hadn't been joking. The first thing the club members had done was arrive with a truckload of material and tools. She'd been worried that they'd tear her bedroom up and it would look awful, but she could see they were taking great care to keep it the same as it was before they added the soundproofing. She loved that whenever any of the club members were asked, or ordered by Victor, to watch the children, they never protested, not ever. Elena made it clear she would always prefer watching them over keeping an eye on the bikes. She even worked with Kenny on his school papers to try to tutor him so he would catch up faster, but she didn't encourage him to be a prospect until he'd finished school.
"You finished, baby?"
Victor asked, standing and pushing back his chair. He reached over and removed his plate. That was another thing. They cleaned up after themselves. She loved that, too.
"I am."
She stood up with him.
"Darby, Zoe, Emily, you girls good with me leaving?"
She always asked because she wanted them to feel comfortable with the club members. At first, they'd said no. She hadn't left. Now, they all three nodded, even Zoe, the most reluctant to be alone with the men.
"Kenny?"
she asked.
"Yeah, I've got lots of schoolwork,"
he said.
"I can help you,"
Elena volunteered.
"Kenny, please make certain Elena rests," Blythe said.
Kenny looked important and nodded curtly, using the exact same gesture Victor often used. Hiding a smile, Blythe grabbed her plate and followed Victor into the kitchen. The moment the plate was rinsed and in the dishwasher, he wrapped his arm around her waist and drew her into him.
"I love you, Mrs. Prokensky,"
he said.
"I love you, Mr. Prokensky,"
she whispered. He kissed her. She melted. He deepened the kiss and she pressed into him.
"Let's get out of here. I found a couple of places I'm pretty certain we can be alone,"
he said, lifting his head.
"I really, really want to be alone with you."
She smiled up at him because she could hear the scraping of chairs in the other room. Savage and Reaper came in to rinse their plates and put them in the dishwasher.
"Just remember, you two, I'm going to do a lot of screaming. Stay away,"
she warned. She even managed to say it without turning bright red. Until they laughed.
The End. This is Lily Basque. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Bound Together by Christine Feehan. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more, so look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.